council is being asked to amend a zoning map. Each application will be introduced. The director will provide council with minutes of the planning and zoning hearing, and those minutes will be made part of the record. The applicant will be called on to present and explain their application and present testimony supporting that, including witnesses. Council may question the applicant and their witnesses. After the applicant has presented the case, council will provide an opportunity for anyone else who wants to speak in favor of the application. All persons who are present and oppose the application will likewise be given an opportunity to speak in opposition. After opposition statements are made, there will be no rebuttal by the applicant, and the hearing will be closed unless County Council decides to keep the record open. If you intend to speak, please come to the front, to the podium, state your name and address, and if you're speaking on behalf of a group, please give the name of the group you're speaking for. If you have a written statement, you may give that written statement to Mr. Lang. It will become part of the record. If you're testifying, please try not to repeat things that have been said by others who have spoken before you. Any persons in attendance should conduct themselves in a proper fashion. If you have a cell phone or other telephonic device, please put it to silent mode. The applicant or their representatives will not be allowed to ask questions of the opposition. The opposition will not be allowed to ask questions of the applicant. When the hearing is over, the council may approve, deny, or defer actions on any matters that are heard. If the Planning and Zoning Commission deferred action, then the council will defer as well. And the first hearing is a conditional use on behalf of Wine Works. Mr. Lang?
Yes. This is an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in a B1 neighborhood business district for a winery store to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Baltimore 100, Sussex County, on a parcel containing 92 hundredths of an acre, more or less. This application was reviewed by the Planning and Zoning Commission through public hearing on March 10th of 2011. We were provided on February 28th of 2011 with an exhibit booklet. The exhibit booklet contained references to House Bill HB 93 and the Farm Winery Law, a letter from the Office of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Commission in reference to licensing, a copy of the tax map of the area, an area photograph, a copy of a portion of the land use plan, and a portion of the strategies for state policies and spending map from the 2008 comprehensive land use plan and related text, a listing of permitted uses and conditional uses in a B1 neighborhood business district, a location map, floor plans, and a site plan for the site, photographs of the facility and the vineyard, a copy of their proposed presentation, and a copy of the support facilities report from DelDOT and suggested proposed conditions. We received comments from the County Engineering Department in reference to this application. We also received a letter with attached photograph submitted in opposition from Garth McCabe, a resident in the neighboring subdivision of Fenwick Farms, expressing concerns about the lack of a fence between the parking area and the subdivision, that a fence has only been partially erected, and that the fence behind his home has not been completed. But this area of the fence is the loading and delivery area for the restaurant bar, and that he will remain opposed until a fence is erected. Adrian Mobilia of Fenwick Wine Cellars was present on behalf of this application with Tim Willard, attorney with Fuquay, Urey, and Willard Professional Association, and gave testimony. There were no parties present in support of or in opposition to the application. At conclusion of the public hearing, the commission discussed this application. Mr. Smith stated that the use is supported by small businesses and agriculture. On March 10th of 2011, the commission did defer action for further consideration. On March 24th of 2011, the commission discussed this application under old business. Mr. Smith stated he would move that the commission recommend approval of conditional use number 1873 for Wine Works LLC for a winery based upon the record made at the public hearing for the following reasons. One, the use is consistent with the underlying zone, which is B1 neighborhood business. It will be located within a B1 shopping center and across the street from where the grapes are grown for the fermenting process. Two, the operation will have no effect on neighboring or adjacent properties and will be contained entirely within the indoor premise that is the subject of this conditional use. Three, the use promotes agribusiness in Sussex County. Four, the use is located along Route 54, which is appropriate for B1 uses and conditional uses of this type. Five, this recommendation is subject, however, to the following conditions. One, in conjunction with the applicant's farm winery license issued by the Delaware Alcoholic Beverage Control Commission, this conditional use permits the fermenting, bottling, and labeling of wine at the site. Two, the conditional use shall be limited to the approximately 2,800 square foot shown on the site plan with shared parking of 55 spaces. Any expansion of the conditional use shall require a review and approval of the Sussex County Planning and Zoning Commission and the Sussex County Council through public hearings. Three, the hours of operation shall be 10 a.m. to 8 p.m., 7 days per week. Four, signage shall be in accordance with the sign regulations that exist for the B1 neighborhood business district. Five, all federal and state regulatory requirements shall be met. Six, the applicant shall comply with all requirements of the Sussex County Engineering Department regarding any discharge wastewater into the county sewer district. And seven, the final site plan shall be subject to the review and approval of the Planning and Zoning Commission. There was a motion by Mr. Smith, seconded by Mr. Ross, and carried unanimously to forward this application to council with a recommendation that the application be approved for the reasons and with the conditions stated. That motion carried 5-0. We did have four booklets passed down to be shared with the council. I've received two additional comments. One was just received today. It is from the County Engineering Department. It's in the form of a memorandum, and it states that this memorandum is to provide additional comments to the reference conditional use. Our previous comment submitted on March 9th, 2011 indicated that it is unknown if the proposed winery operation would generate a type of wastewater that could be discharged to the central sewer system. Mr. Adrian Mobilia provided additional information between March 22nd, 2011 and March 25th of 2011. Based on the information provided, additional wastewater discharge from the winery process is only associated with cleaning processes of equipment and can be discharged to the wastewater system. Grape stems, skins, and seeds remaining after the pressing are returned to the vineyard or composted. An additional comment also was from the Sussex Conservation District. It was received on March 15th of 2011. It's in the form of a memorandum, and it references that the site contains three soil types, that the applicant would be required to follow recommended erosion and sediment control practices during any construction, and to maintain vegetation. That there are no storm flood hazard areas affected. It will not be necessary for any off-site drainage improvements. It will not be necessary for any on-site drainage improvements, and there are no tax ditches affected. And that's all I have, unless you have questions.
If there's no questions by council, Mr. Willard.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Mr. President, council members, my name is Tim Willard with Fuqua Urim Willard on behalf of the applicant. This is not Adrian Mobilia. This is Nicholas Mobilia, his father. It's Adrian's business. He started it. I've been working with Adrian for a couple years as seeing this through. Nicholas Mobilia has a 250-acre vineyard in Erie, Pennsylvania, and he actually sent his son to Penn State where he studied soils, and Adrian was going to come home and help work on the farm. Adrian met a young lady from Ocean City, and now they have a two-year-old daughter, and Adrian is going to stay here in Fenwick and work on this project. I asked Nicholas to be here because Adrian could not. He had to be out of state, out west, and Mr. Mobilia has worked in the shop and is very familiar with the whole process, so if you have any questions, he's well capable of answering those. I'm sorry there are not enough booklets. I thought I handed 12 of them out. I have just one up here as well. In my presentation, I'm pretty much going to race through the tabs there, and if you have any questions, you certainly, obviously, will ask me. I think, you know, the county doesn't have really jurisdiction over alcohol issues, but I think it's necessary to talk a little bit about the history of this and the ABC law. Because on the first tab, you'll see some legislation. Delaware has a farm winery law. Most of you are familiar with Peggy Raley's place, and there are a couple other. And basically, the farm winery law allows the alcohol commissioner to license somebody to manufacture wine and grow it. It also allows them to sell retail wine that's bottled elsewhere if it's designated for that particular shop in diminishing amounts. The idea over 3 years, the idea being as their vineyard comes up, they should be manufacturing more on site. To get that license, you need to have all government approvals. And that's where this legislation came in. And basically, it was necessary because of what Adrian had found. That is the property on Route 54, where one side of the road was B1, where he wanted to open his retail shop, and in the back had enough square footage, a building with like a large clean garage where he could do his winery, and across the street was the Stiles Farm where he had access to 20 acres, and that was AR1. So he was able to enter an agreement to get the acreage to plant the vineyards, but to be able to manufacture the wine, that is to make the wine in the tanks and to bottle it, that's not a permitted use under B1. One of your tabs has what are permitted use, and arguably they're more demanding uses, but manufacturing and bottling is not a permitted use. So, and Adrian had worked with Mr. Lank on this, we needed to ask for a conditional use to do that. And that's why we're here today. In the meantime, he could not get his farm winery license unless he had a letter from the county saying this is a permitted use. So we went to the legislature, and they changed the law to allow him to have a temporary license to start selling this product that's just designated for his shop until he gets the approval from the county, if he gets it, if you all approve it. And so that's what he got. The legislation was passed. He got a temporary license, and he immediately filed for the conditional use. That's why we're here today. Long way around it. You know, ironically, if he had his operation for retail and bottling across the street on the agricultural site, he wouldn't need permission because I think it's incidental to agricultural use. That's how I understand it. And someday he may grow over there. He's already got an acre in wine. I mean, in grapes. So that's what tab one is, if you care. That's how that's the background on the legislation. You have in tab two the license. As far as the area, we don't believe it adversely affects, that is, the use, the neighboring properties. In fact, we've submitted some documents, the tax map, as well as the Google Earth photograph showing what other uses are around. There's obviously some residential on Route 54. You're pretty close to the beach, the tourist area, and in fact, this use sort of complements the transition between agricultural and maybe recreational, where it's more of a destination area, but it's also agricultural, which we think is unique. So you have the tax map showing the B1 right next to it. On tab three, tab four shows you the Google Earth where Smitty McGee's is down the street. Up the road is Zonko's, and I think that's Mallard. That neighborhood's called Mallard Point across the way.
Mallard Lakes,
I'm sorry. As far as your comp plan, it's an environmentally sensitive developing district. Already has sewer, as you know, and water. This area calls for development, some concentrated development, so we think it's consistent with your comp plan. Permitted uses accommodate development, provided special environmental concerns. In this case, there's sewer. It's in a level 3 for state strategies, which calls for development as well. In tab 6, I've shown you the permitted uses for B1. And we're pursuing this under the commercial and industrial exception for conditional uses. A conditional use should fulfill the purpose and be semi-public. I've already commented that we believe that the agricultural as well as the commercial nature of this is consistent with the area. In tab 7, you have a site plan. The area is 2,800 square feet. The lion's share of the property will be used for the manufacturing of wine. The front end is for retail, and there's some pictures of that, not very good pictures actually that I took, but they're there where the retail and then where there's some sampling that will take place. I'm on page 2 of the site plan where it actually shows the tanks. They're fairly small tanks. They're not like big, huge things, and they can fit 24 of them. And the reason for that is because they're always making different kinds of wines based on different kinds of grapes. And Mr. Mobile, you can talk more on that if you have questions. But some they might add some more sugar to, so that's why they have different tanks. If you look at that site plan, you'll see that the bottling area is the right-hand corner. It's actually a pretty state-of-the-art piece of equipment, and there just contains hoses that go from the tanks to oversimplify to the bottling, and then in the right-hand portion where all the pallets and where the wine is stored, and then it'll be just moved up front where it can be sold. And there's also a tasting bar up front where they also sell retail. The last page of tab 7 has a much more detailed picture of the complex. I say complex. There's a restaurant there and a shade store, and his would be on the back left. It is on the back left now as it exists. Tab 6 shows a picture of the facade, Fenwick Wine Cellars. Second picture there shows Nicholas's son, Adrian, standing in front of the plants. There's already an acre there, and he's got room to grow, I think up to 10 or 20 acres. And you see the vines there that are starting to grow. Apparently the soil's pretty good for this type of wine. And there's several other pictures of the inside of the shop in that tab. Tab 9 is a presentation that Mr. Mobilia Adrian put together, which gives you also some of the history that I've already spoken to, but tells you also what actually will be in the back portion of the garage. And as Mr. Lank said, and as the Planning Commission found, it will all be enclosed. There are tanks, hoses, pumps, filters, and bottling lines. Could I ask Mr. Mobilia to step forward and ask a couple questions?
Yes.
Just briefly, state your name for the record.
Nick Mobilia.
And where are you from?
Erie, Pennsylvania.
Can you just describe for the council, the process for making wine and how it would occur in this particular location?
Okay, the process would be, first of all, he has these holding tanks. These pages aren't numbered, but it says tanks on it. Those tanks are approximately 400-gallon tanks, and they stand about as tall as we do, okay? And what they do, the wine is actually fermented in the tank. That's where you add sugar and yeast. It ferments for about a month, and when you're done, you use the machine right on the bottom left-hand corner, which is a filter. So what you're going to do now, you're going to run the wine through this filter, and you're going to clarify it. So any suspended solids is going to be taking out, and that's going to give you that clear wine when you open your bottle. Then the solids get stuck on those little plates on the cloths. In the cloths, you just take them out, you put them in a bundle, and you put them in the dumpster. And then the machine is just rinsed with hot water, and that's how you clean it. So the winery does not use a lot of water, and when you do, it's just rinsing grape juice off, and it just goes down a drain. So you're not putting any type of solids or anything that's going to screw up your treatment plant.
How are the grapes crushed?
Okay, these grapes will be picked by hand. So if you go to a supermarket and you pick up your grape, it's got the green stem in it that holds all the little berries together. So the first thing you do is you take it into the plant and you run it through a little stemmer. And a stemmer is a little horizontal stainless steel cylinder, and it has holes in it the size of a quarter all the way around it, okay? And then in the center of that, they have a stainless steel shaft, and you got about 30 rubber fingers on it. So you dump the grapes in the end, and these little rubber fingers turn at high speed, and they take the bunch of grapes and they whip them in a circle. So what you're going to do is you're going to use centrifugal force. You're going to force the fruit and the juice to go through the screen. Well, the stems and the leaves can't get through, so they work their way out to the end, and they just fall into a big box. And at the end of the day, you just take that box over, and you can either compost them, it's just dry green tissue, or you can throw it on the floor of the vineyard. Then from there, all the fruit is collected in a little pump, and you pump it into the press. So when the press is full, you close it and you lock it all up. And these presses are bladder presses. They have an inner tube on the inside, so there's basically no moving parts, and they're very clean. So when the press is full of juice, you lock the door, you inflate, you push air into the press with an air compressor. The bladder inflates and takes all the grapes and pushes them against the stainless steel screen. Then all the juice comes out. And after about a half an hour, when there's no more juice coming out, you release the air and you open the door in the press and you take all the dry pumice out. Now all that is seeds and skins. There's no moisture at all. You put it in the crates and you take it across the street and you can compost it in a big pile for a year. And you can even sell it after a year in the state of Pennsylvania as a compost. Or you can just put it on the vineyard and it just rots and decays and it turns into nitrogen for the plants for the next year. Then the juice from there goes into the fermenters, into those tanks that we were just talking about, and the sugar is added in the yeast, and then the fermentation process starts.
Can you bottle directly from the tank to the bottling?
After you filter, you're going to start your bottling process, and the bottler is no bigger than this little podium right here. And what it is, it's just a cylinder with a tank on it, and it has different sets of nipples, has 6 or 8 nipples on it. And you take your bottles, and after you clean your bottle with nitrogen, because you got air and dust in a bottle, because bottles aren't really clean when you buy them, even when they're new. So you blow it out with nitrogen, you set it on this pedestal, and as the machine goes in a circle, the wine comes in and fills the bottle up. Then when it comes out of the bottle, it goes to the next station and it receives a cork. And then it goes to the next station and a label is put on automatically in the capsule, and then it's ready for sale. Not a lot of big equipment, it's just very small, very expensive stuff. It's very expensive.
And this will all be housed within the unit there, correct?
Yes.
And did you prepare a statement for the engineers here in Sussex County involving the cleaning, pressing, and annual discharge?
Yes, I did.
Just in a nutshell, how are the tanks cleaned?
The cleans are basically cleaned with Profoam Plus. Okay, that is a cleaner that all your big food processing company use. So it's a liquid when you buy it, it's concentrated. And what you do, you have a little substation on your wall, and it's hooked up to an air system and a hot water system. So when you turn it on, you're pumping a little bit of the solution into the water. The water gets mixed with air, and it goes through this big nozzle and turns it into a foam. So all the stainless steel equipment that is going to be exposed to any wine or grapes, you sanitize it by spraying this foam on it. Inside out, you pump it through the lines. Let it set about 10 minutes and you just rinse it with warm water. And then all the bacteria that might have been growing on the surface is now dead. So you just rinse it with water and then you're ready to begin your processing. So you don't use a lot of water. You just need enough water to rinse off the foam. So the rule of thumb from in Pennsylvania is it's 1 gallon of water to produce 1 gallon of finished wine. So it's not a lot of water in the scheme of things. A household would probably use probably more water than what he's going to use right here at this winery.
I think, and Adrian indicated, last year they sold about 3,500 gallons. So, to the extent this was the memo that the engineering got that sparked their memo to you all saying that it could be discharged to the sewer, I'd like to submit it for the record. You've heard my representations to the council. Are they true and correct to the best of your knowledge?
Yes, they are. They're very good. Not being a farmer.
It's real.
First we've ever heard that, sir.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're sitting here in disbelief.
Yeah, they have to decide that, really. Doesn't matter what you think.
Okay.
So, anyway, gentlemen, that's all we have. And ladies.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Are there any questions of counsel of Mr. Willard or his witness?
I do have one question. In the I guess from P&Z, somebody, a Garth McCabe, expressed concern about lack of a fence.
Yeah,
in the
and
parking
there, I'll
area
show you
the subdivision.
Yeah, I think I have the picture of it too, if I can. Mr.
Sure.
And we addressed this. They didn't put it in their conditions.
No, they didn't.
Well, quite frankly, I'm not sure we have a dog in the fight, except as a tenant, we want to be a good neighbor.
Well, the reason I asked that question, I guess, Mr. Gordon, is in your exhibit booklet under tab 6, where it talks about permitted uses under B1,
uh-huh,
and under item H, it says a solid fence or wall 6 feet high must be erected along the property line adjoining a residential district.
Yeah, and maybe Mr. Lank could speak to this more clearly. There, when I looked at the file, I actually tried to research that and saw some give and take between the county and the landlord. You know, my client doesn't own the property.
Right.
It's the landlord. I think it's Keith Properties. And I think they were told to leave some of it open. But I guess my response to you, Mr. Vinson, is, you know, if it's a condition or something that we can do, we have no objection to dealing with
it.
But
it's not your land. I mean, you're just...
Right.
You don't have the ability to go erect a fence on, mm-hmm. on your...
Yeah, that's my point.
It is the conditional use.
I know it.
Key properties is has a restaurant right. and a rental unit plus this unit. They originally proposed to put up a landscaping screen between them and Fenwick Farms next door. They hadn't done it. We cited them. We came out and said because of the way the land is configured, they have a paved loading area, then there's a curb, and there's only a couple of feet of land, and it drops off into a ditch. And we told them it would be better for them and better for us if they put a fence up.
Okay.
So the fence is mostly up.
Okay.
Majority of the fence is up. And it's a solid wooden fence, stockade type. Might be higher than 6 foot, actually. I'm not sure if it's...
But it's something that you're dealing with.
We've already dealt with it. Okay. There was an issue that we said if the fence has to be erected so that wherever entryways are, wherever lights are, that those lights don't project out over doors, type basically,
right.
that they don't project out and impact the neighboring properties. Originally, it was going to be just landscaping, but they had
right.
a fence, so they dumpsters and fenced that one lawn.
Thank you.
I did contact Billy Scott immediately when I saw that because I know he represented the landlord, and I think he was bringing it to their attention. And
okay, that's fine.
And add to that was a negotiation between staff, county attorney, Vince Robertson on behalf of the commission, Billy Scott, the attorney for Keith Properties, and representatives from Keith Properties.
Okay. And your vineyard, is that land that was Stiles Atkins?
It's
farm?
Is it Stiles Atkins farm
yes.
across the street?
Okay.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, we're renting that from him.
And, sure. and they only have an acre planted now, but I think they have up to 10 that they have an option to do, so they're going to...
Working with Mr. Stiles to get more.
Stiles Atkins?
Yeah.
Okay. Any more questions from council? If not, is there anyone here that would like to speak on behalf of this application? Anyone that would like to speak on behalf of the application? If not, is there anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to this application? Anyone here in opposition? If not, Mr. President, I believe at this point we can close the public hearing, and if deemed appropriate by council, close the record in this matter.
Okay. Have any opposition to closing the record? Okay.
No,
no problem.
Okay, and I've asked Mr. Lang today if he would read the short titles when you're ready to do so.
Okay.
Mr. Lank?
It's an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in a B1 neighborhood business district for a winery / store to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Baltimore 100, Sussex County, on a parcel containing 92 hundredths of an acre, more or less.
Make a motion that we adopt the conditional use 1873 with the suggested reasons and conditions as imposed by planning and zoning.
We have a motion and a second to adopt the conditional use 1873 with conditions. Any questions? I will take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
I vote yes. It's appropriate use for that area, and it supports agriculture as well.
Cool.
The property is already zoned B1, and this, I think, is a nice fit. And it will be compatible with surrounding uses, so my vote is yes.
Mr. Phillips.
I vote yes. It's compatible use with the surrounding area with the conditions by planning and zoning.
Mr. Wilson.
Vote yes, according to P&Z.
I also agree with planning and zoning's findings and agree with their recommendations, and I think it does make sense as agriculture. It's a good thing. I vote yes. Motion carried.
Okay. See y'all.
Thank you.
Are you going to sell the wine at the two doors down at the restaurant and you can get the...
The next application is John Lingo, conditional use. Mr. Lingo?
Made us thirsty.
Mr. Lang?
Yes, this is an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agriculture residential district for offices, both general business or professional, to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Broadkill 100, Sussex County, on a parcel containing 32,410 square feet, more or less. Before you, you have a copy of the report of the commission's hearings on March 10th. The Planning and Zoning Commission held a public hearing on this application. On March 2nd of 2011, I think I said 10, didn't I? 2011, sorry. On March 2nd of 2011, the applicant did provide an exhibit booklet, which I will pass down copies. I made copies of this one. And I also provide copies of his survey and site plan. On August 6th of 2010, DelDOT did provide comments, and they are part of the report. On March 9th of 2011, the County Engineering Department Utility Planning Division provided a memorandum, also a part of the report. On March 10th of 2011, at the public hearing, Mr. Lingo was present and gave testimony. There were no parties present in support of or in opposition to the application. At the conclusion of the public hearings, the commission discussed this application. Mr. Johnson stated he would move that the commission recommend approval of conditional use number 1882 for John Lingo for general business or professional offices based on the record and for the following reasons. One, the site is within a developing area according to the 2008 comprehensive land use plan. Two, this application is for professional offices, including doctor's offices. This location is appropriate for such a use since given a close proximity to residential developments. Three, the site is in close proximity to other commercial and business uses on Route 9 and Route 5 and is next to commercially zoned property. Four, the project with the conditions and stipulations placed upon it will not have an adverse impact on neighboring properties or community. Five, the use is of a public or semi-public character and is desirable for the general convenience and welfare of the area and the county. Six, this recommendation for approval is subject to the following conditions and stipulations. A, the offices shall be limited to general business or professional offices. B, any security lights shall only be installed on buildings and shall be screened so that they do not shine on any neighboring properties or Route 9. C, the use shall comply with all DelDOT regulations and requirements. The entrance shall be from Route 9 as approved by DelDOT. D, signage shall be limited to one lighted ground sign not to exceed 32 square feet per side. E, all trash containers shall be placed at the rear of the building and shall be screened from view. The location of the containers shall be shown on the site plan. F, the site plan shall be designed to accommodate all necessary parking spaces, right-of-ways, setbacks, and landscaping. G, the project shall comply with all applicable Sussex Conservation District requirements. And H, the final site plan shall be subject to the review and approval of the Sussex County Planning and Zoning Commission. There was a motion by Mr. Johnson, seconded by Mr. Burton, and carried unanimously to forward this application to council with a recommendation that the application be approved for the reasons and with the conditions stated. That motion carried 5-0. I also received one agency comment to date since that public hearing. On March 15th of 2011, I received a memorandum from the Sussex Conservation District. We are advised that there is one soil type on this property, that the applicant will be required to follow recommended erosion and sediment control practices during construction and to maintain vegetation after construction, that there are no storm flood hazard areas affected, that it will not be necessary for any off-site drainage improvements, that it is not likely that on-site drainage improvements will be required, and that no tax ditches are affected. And that's all I have unless you have questions.
What's on the property now?
Dwelling.
Mm-hmm.
And it's right next to the post office and the gas station and a couple of little stores.
Any questions of council or by council? Mr. Lingo?
Hello, John Lingo at 5009 Beverly Lane, Milton, Delaware. I'm submitting this application to have conditional use for this property. It actually adjoins the other piece of property owned by my parents. My father purchased this lot from Mr. Brittingham in April, shortly before he passed away. And the intention was to expand the commercial use of what is now the Exxon gas station, Harbison Deli, barber shop, post office, and make additional space available for future commercial endeavors. The booklet I had prepared starts off with page 3, showing a PDF map of the general area for purposes of defining the lots, the tax map parcel numbers there. Page 4 is an aerial view. Bottom left corner shows the word subject over top of the parcel we're discussing today. To the left of subject is the Exxon Gas Deli post office structure that I referred to. Page 5 and 6 list the current, according to the Sussex County website, owners and uses of the adjoining properties. Page 7 indicates the current uses of the adjoining properties, C being commercial, V vacant, U utility. In fact, the residential use of the subject property is an exception in that area, and all the other properties are either have been recently or currently used for commercial purposes. Page 8 is a view standing on the north side of Route 9, looking at the subject property. The yellow sign there in the yard is the notice of the planning and zoning meeting. Page 9 looks to the east, still on the north side of Route 9, showing the vacant lot directly east of the subject property. Page 10 is in the yard of the subject property, south of 9, looking back across the street at a structure most recently used to house a commercial roofing business. There, they have since vacated the premises. And that was it. So my hope is that the decision today will recognize the general commercial use of the adjoining properties in that area and approve for conditional use the commercial use of this parcel.
Any questions from council? Mr. Lingo, do you have any witnesses to call on your behalf?
I do not.
Okay. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in behalf of this application? Anyone that would like to speak in behalf of the application? Seeing none, is there anyone here that'd like to speak in opposition to this application? Anyone that'd like to speak in opposition? Seeing none, at this point, Mr. President, I believe that we can conclude this public hearing, and if it's a pleasure of the council, close the record on this matter.
Should I read the heading, please?
This is an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agriculture residential district for offices, being general business or professional, to be located on certain parcels of land lying and being in Broadkill 100, Sussex County, containing 32,410 square feet, more or less.
I'll make that motion.
That's with conditions, correct?
Conditions. With conditions.
We have a motion to approve with conditions.
Second.
And a second. Any question on a motion? Not, we'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver.
Yes, I vote yes. It's in a developing area, and there is a lot of business use adjoining the property, and it's appropriate for that particular part of the county.
Cole.
Yeah, the level of service will not change as a result of this application, and there are other commercial uses in the area, so I believe that this project will be compatible. Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Based on the record recommendation of planning and zoning, I'll vote yes. It's compatible with the area in a developing district.
Mr. Wilson.
I vote yes on the recommendation of P&Z.
I also agree with P&Z's recommendation, and it does fit in the area, other commercial districts around there. I vote yes. Motion carried. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The next application is conditional use, Margaret Taylor. Mr. Lang.
Yes. This is an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agriculture residential district for multifamily dwelling structures, proposing 6 units to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Little Creek 100, Sussex County, containing 0.989 acres, more or less. For the benefit of council, I am passing down copies of the survey and site plan for this application. This application was also reviewed through public hearing with the Planning and Zoning Commission on March 10th of 2011. On November 5th of 2010, the department received comments from DLDOT in the form of a support facilities report. On March 9th of 2011, the County Engineering Department Utility Planning Division provided comments in the form of a memorandum, also part of the report. The site does contains one structure with two units, one structure with three units, a manufactured home, and an accessory building. For the benefit of the council, in case you haven't been there, I'll pass down photographs taken by staff showing the facilities.
Yeah, I'd like to see that.
On the premise. Melvin Green was present on behalf of Margaret Taylor and gave testimony. Larry Blankenship was present in support of the application. He is a tenant that resides on the premise. Elizabeth Messick, Robert Horsey, Amy Granbrill, and Janet Niblett also gave testimony in opposition to the application. On March 10th of 2011, the commission deferred action for further consideration. That motion carried 5-0. On March 24th, the commission again discussed this application and again deferred action for further consideration. They have yet to make a recommendation on this application. In reference to the photographs I passed down in your survey, units A, B, and C are in the one-story building, or the center building, which has a canopy out front. Units number D and E are in the brick face building to the left of that, and then the mobile home is a six-unit intended for rental. Based on testimony, there's always been a manufactured home on that site, even before zoning, according to one of the neighbors.
Or not this particular one, but...
No, it can be replaced.
Right.
On a regular basis, since it existed prior. I did receive one additional comment from agency as a Sussex Conservation District. It was received on March 15th of 2011. The site does contain three soil types. The applicant would be required to follow recommended erosion and sediment control practices during any construction and to maintain vegetation. There are no storm flood hazard areas or tax ditches affected, and it will not be necessary for any off-site or on-site drainage improvements, according to the conservation district. And as I said earlier, the commission has yet to make a decision on this application. Their action basically is deferred.
Is the third building, is this occupied?
It's an accessory building.
Okay.
It doesn't show up in the photographs.
Okay.
Are there any other questions of Mr. Lang? If not, obviously, even with my bad eyes, I can tell you're not Margaret Taylor. So would you like to take the podium and introduce yourself, please?
I'm Melvin Green, 32790 Bifit Boulevard, Laurel, Delaware.
Okay. And you need to make your presentation of what you're asking for.
Oh, we've submitted this application for conditional use to keep the apartments going. That's about all there is. So we got caught about having it. We've been involved with it. They were used as apartments before, and we'd like to keep it going that way.
Okay, so you're asking to keep the apartments
yes.
going as they've
yes.
been used in the past?
Yes.
And I take it Ms. Taylor owns these apartments?
Yes, sir.
How long, she bought it in 04?
Actually, it was 06, I think it was. I said 04 last time, but it was 06.
06, okay.
Yes, sir, I'm sorry.
Do you have any idea how long, and when you bought it, it was six units?
Yes.
She bought it, not you or whatever. Anyway, when she bought it, there were six units. Was there any indication that the units, how long the units had been there? Does anybody have any record of that?
Person lived there.
That was a site, it was violated. That's the reason we're here.
Okay, but is it a recent conversion? I mean, he's saying that in 06, when they purchased it, it was already six units. Is that what your testimony is?
The assessment records didn't make any reference to multifamily use of the property.
What was the date for that?
The assessment records? Oh, they vary, because they have dates based on permits. There was a permit in '07, there was a remodeling permit in '06. And then you get into what they found later, what's noted on more currently, is that commercial building made into an apartment, one, which is, and does not rent it, that should be the building on the left, which is a brick front building. It says they're not rented, so it assumes it's just an apartment. Then the next one says there is a apartment upstairs, that would be the building with the canopy out front, which was formerly a service station. And that's probably 55 years old, but the apartment was added. And there was a permit on, for the manufactured home as a replacement. We have a copy of that permit.
What year was that, do you know, or is it?
The one that we copied, 85, that was a replacement permit even then.
Okay.
And that there had been noted that it had been there since 68. And
okay.
Then the other one was referencing in 2006, there was a replacement of that trailer. And that was, new owner was just a transfer from the Mussers to Margaret Taylor, showing the conveyance of the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Or, excuse me.
The permit in 06, who filed that, Mrs. Taylor or the old?
The permit in 06 was filed by Thomas Musser.
Musser.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And he was putting in another apartment at that point, but that probably, right?
Well, this is the permit was relating to the manufactured home.
Oh, okay.
The assessment cards, because they use tape overs when you put change ownership, they use a decal over top previous one. And the only one reference had Mrs. Musser's name on it, and it shows previous owner of that would have been Kenneth Dishroom.
And the 07 permit was taken out in who? Mrs. Taylor?
The old mobile home permit?
Well, 07, there was a permit taken out. If they bought it in 06, it would, I guess, have to be Mrs. Taylor.
Right, I assume so. It just has a number.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
I didn't have a copy of that one. There was a remodeling permit in 06. There was a permit in 07. It would have had to have been a remodeling also, because there was no new buildings placed.
When Mrs. Taylor bought it, do you know if she had six rental agreements with six families?
We had, when we bought it, there was only one person living there at the time.
There weren't anybody living in these other apartments?
No. We had went in there and redone them all. We drywalled them, got electrical inspections on it, repainted them all back up.
Okay. Out. But you didn't create new apartments. There were six kitchens and
one,
six.
There's one apartment or apartment B. We remade that into an apartment that used to be a store.
Okay, so you did add one apartment.
Right there we did, yes, sir.
You did add, so it was maybe five living areas, you're saying, spaces, and you added one.
Apartment B, not to interrupt, George, but apartment B is the second floor of the service station.
C.
Okay, because you had A and C are on the ground floor, and B is on the second floor.
They'll see.
So you added that unit?
Yes.
C, okay.
And Lawrence, is there any kind of information about any septic inspections as all this place kept growing?
No, that's one of the reasons the commission deferred action in their discussion. They were concerned about whether it was suitable for septic for this number of units.
Well,
we haven't got a response back yet.
Did the commission request an inspection done? What are they?
From Denrick?
Or somebody. I mean, what are they waiting on?
They basically deferred action, but that was one of the considerations they were concerned about. They didn't direct us to proceed with obtaining
Denrick,
but it should be.
Yeah, we ought to make sure we have some information of whether it can accommodate or not, if the soils or something.
It only has a holding tank, is that right? Yep, holding tank?
Yes, we have a holding tank in a soil, yes.
Has to be pumped out all of it.
Yes.
Inaccessible. So anyway, holding tanks are typically temporary, but I guess they have a permit to dump the holding tank stuff at Laurel. Doesn't Laurel? Seaver doesn't accept it anymore, does it?
No.
Seaford used to, I think.
Laurel used to accept also. I don't know if they still do or not. Where do they take the material?
We use Roto-Rooter. We use Roto-Rooter to take care of it.
Contractor takes care of it, yeah.
Okay, I got some.
Any other questions of the applicant? If there are not, do you have any witnesses here today for you?
Yeah, Larry Blankenship.
Okay, would you like to come forward and give us your name and address and wait till you get up to the podium?
Mr. Larry, Blankenship, sorry, I do got a little bit of a stuttering problem. I live at 3371115 Bi-State Boulevard. And I have been there for more than 3 years. My daggone folks live across the daggone street, and I don't want to lose my little home. So I appreciate it if you take that into consideration, please, and I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to speak in favor of this application? Anyone else like to speak in favor? Is there anyone here today that would like to speak in opposition to this application? Yes, I see someone standing towards the rear.
Wetlands in the back.
Hello, my name is Amy Gambrell. I live at 32704 Bi-State Boulevard. I live directly across the street. Beg to differ with Mr. Green. I've lived there 20 years. There were no apartments. The trailer has always been there. I watched them take the roof off of the brick building, take the equipment in or the boards, whatever they did, to make that into apartments. They did the same thing with the garage. I believe the brick building was a Tucker automobile dealership in the 50s. It was a garage, and I have a lot of concerns about this. Since the apartments have been there, this is a residential neighborhood where we live. We all have children, and since the apartments have been there, we have had a lot of police presence, a lot of issues with that. Also have a concern about the septic. I mean, you're putting six apartments for families on 0.9 acres that butts right up to Rosicatum Branch, which is a watershed. And I just, the density causes problems. There is no parking there for these apartments. We are right on Route 113. When the cars are pulled in and parked in front of these apartments, you may have 15 to 20 feet before you hit the shoulder of Route 113. These apartments, as I said, all I can say is, since they have done this, we've had police presence, we have...
But at those apartments, the police presence is associated with those apartments? Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay,
this was a very, very quiet residential neighborhood until this occurred. And those apartments, as I said, I've lived there 20 years. I watched them make these apartments. They were not there. They were not existing. I could see it from my front porch.
A question maybe I got. Mm-hmm. There's three buildings? Across the front and a
There's
trip.
Three buildings okay. across the front, yes. One is a, I don't know if it was an old garage, like where they worked on the vehicles.
Mm-hmm. What would be, in your mind, acceptable uses of those structures since they've been there so long? Now, they have been commercial in the past.
It would be acceptable. As a matter of fact, we would love to have a type of general store or something there, I mean, because it's outside of town limits. Instead of having to go in town, that's... It's outside of Laurel. It's on the road towards Del Mar. Wouldn't have to be a gas station or anything like that, but I just, the trailer, fine. It's in the back. You can't see it. Mr. Horsey is not here today. He came with us and spoke last time, but he is a farmer that has an access. His access road to his farm goes right around the corner. Maybe, I don't know, I'm not a good judge of footage, but probably 30 feet. He's driving his combines down there, and there's kids playing in that road, in the access road. I mean, it's just a mess. I have real concerns.
Well, Lawrence, the property it could have been grandfathered in as a commercial use if it had been used commercially, right? But it's lost.
Once it ceased use for over 2 years, it's void as far as a commercial activity.
So commercial activity would also need to be rezoned and et cetera, et cetera. So there is four buildings there, okay, or four structures. You wouldn't, what would your position be on just four units, each structure a unit?
As long as they were up to code, and as long as they, you know, the it wasn't affecting the environment.
Because the other thing would be if it got denied residential use of some of those buildings, I don't know if we can actually do that because they're structurally there and they've been...
they've been there since they purchased
been so,
them.
Yeah, they're before zoning and everything else. So, you could be faced with some vacant buildings that could cause other problems.
They have been vacant until the time they purchased them.
Right. Well, that could have been
never
another, right?
Any problem.
Well, I know, but that could have been another owner's choice. Now things do change.
And I understand that, but the police presence concerns me.
Okay.
I mean, that is a big concern.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Is there anyone else that is here to like to speak in opposition? Like, come forward, please.
My name is Elizabeth Messick, and I live at 32689 by State Boulevard, which is across the side road, the access road that goes back to Mr. Horsey's farm from the apartments. And I've lived in my house since 1995, and Amy is correct. The trailer was there and occupied when we moved in. It's across the side road from our backyard, and it's been more or less continually occupied since we moved there in 1995. The family that's been there now has been there for quite some time. There may have been a few times when it wasn't occupied, but basically it was. But the buildings in the front were not occupied. The brick building was just an abandoned, my father told me it used to be a car dealership. He remembers going there when he was a kid and looking at a car. And the white building with the canopy thing on the front wasn't occupied either. And I don't want to, repeat everything Amy said, but she's right. I mean, we raised our kids in what was a really safe neighborhood. Our kids were able to go back and forth across the street and play with each other and that kind of thing. And we have daughters now who are 17 and 18 years old, Amy and I do, and they're afraid to cross the road to go to each other's house at night because of the police or some of the tenants. I mean, some of the tenants that have been there have been very nice people, like Larry, who spoke. He's a nice guy. We all like Larry. But there's a huge turnover there. I mean, every time you turn around, somebody's moving in, somebody's moving out, somebody's moving in. It's not the kind of... Everything else is single-family homes with stability, where even if it's, whether it's a rental property or an owner-occupied property, we have a chance to get to know our neighbors and talk to them and create a neighborhood. And with this, I mean, you never know who's there. And then when there are these disputes and you have groups of people outside fighting, or, one neighbor had a resident pull a gun on him one time. We've had other people come into our yard and take things. We've had people with situations where a tenant would have cars in and out, in and out, in and out all day long, wondering what kind of business they were having there, and the police up there over and over and over again, which has caused us all concerns. And, on the matter of the septic thing, we have a single family house, and we have one of the big septic mounds in our side yard for just our home, and we wonder how, environmentally safe it is with six apartments sharing something that's not as involved as our septic mound. And just the same thing with the parking as well, because it's a private road that goes back to a farm, and children then might be in the road, or just the fact of getting things in and out. All of these things have been concerns for all of us. But in particular, the fact that you've mostly got single family dwellings, and then you've got a situation involved in the middle of it where there's just so much strife and contention and the police in and out. It's been difficult for all of us since they've been made into apartments.
They have parking in the back, don't they? They can park their cars in the back?
The trailer has a driveway where the people who live in the trailer park. The buildings that are in the front, there's a, I guess, kind of a grassy area between the buildings in the front and the trailer, which is, I guess, should be the backyard for the units. And then there's like a paved bit right in the front of the units where they park.
Okay, that's where they're parking.
But there isn't a parking lot or anything in the back, no.
No, okay.
Any other questions from council? And thank you. Is there anyone else that's here that would like to speak in opposition? Seeing none at this point, Mr. President, it's appropriate to close the public hearing. If the council desires, I did hear a question concerning checking environmental issues.
You want to leave the record open?
Keep the record open. The public hearing would be closed. We cannot decide anything today because it was deferred by planning and zoning.
Right.
My suggestion would be that we make a motion here to require the applicant to supply us with a septic evaluation and also some documentation from there's a holding tank of some sort, where it's going, and see some documentation about where it goes, you know, where the hauler's doing and what is he hauling out of. So, again, we need a septic evaluation and, I think, documentation supporting the holding tank operation. So that would be my motion, that the applicant provide that before we make a decision.
Do we have a second? We have a second on that motion. Any question on the motion? We'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Now I need a motion to defer.
Yes.
Correct. Motion to second to defer. Any question on the motion? Nope. Take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried.
All right. Got that, sir?
Thank you very much. The next matter is a change of zone. And Mr. Lank, these letters are running together for me, so.
Oh.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. 1702.
The next application is an ordinance to amend the comprehensive zoning map of Sussex County from an AR1 agriculture residential district to a B1 neighborhood business district for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Cedar Creek 100, Sussex County, containing 5.93 acres, more or less. For the benefit of council, if you can share, again, I will pass down four copies of the survey site plan for this site. On March 10th of 2011, the Planning and Zoning Commission held a public hearing on this application. The applicants had submitted a survey site plan of the site. On November 30th of 2010, DLDOT provided a letter addressing the site, and that is a part of the report. On March 9th of 2011, the County Engineering Department Utility Planning Division provided comments, also are part of the report. Lamar Yoder was present on behalf of the application and gave testimony. David Wilson, auctioneer, was present in support of the application and gave testimony. There were no parties present in opposition to the application. At the conclusion of the public hearings, the commission discussed the application. Mr. Burton stated he would move that the commission recommend approval of change of zone 1702 for SJY LLC to change the zoning from AR1 agriculture residential to B1 neighborhood business based upon a record made at the public hearing and for the following reasons. One, the site is the subject of prior approved conditional uses that are consistent with uses permitted in the B1 district. Two, the site is located along Route 16, which is a major thoroughfare in Sussex County, which is appropriate for this type of zoning, especially given the prior uses of the property. Three, the proposed use will not have an adverse effect on neighboring property, traffic, or the community. Four, no parties appeared in opposition to the change of zoning. Five, any specific use of the property would be subject to DLDOT review. Six, the Planning and Zoning Commission would have the opportunity to review and approve any proposed revisions to the site plan. There was a motion by Mr. Burton, seconded by Mr. Johnson, carried unanimously to forward this application to council with a recommendation that the application be approved for the reasons stated. That motion carried 5-0. For the benefit of the council, just a little history. In 1990, there was a conditional use number 927 filed on behalf or approved on for William Tribbett, and it was for a country decorating shop. On 1994, conditional use number 1067 was an application of Country Friends by Linda, which was a country craft shop also selling plants and produce. And then in 2002, conditional use number 1447 was the application of Ron Yoder to expand that facility, to that site, to allow for meat cutting and sales. And at that time, there was a grocery-type store with a deli, and they provided cut meats, et cetera. I did receive one additional application comment from the Sussex Conservation District. It was received on March 15th. The site does contain two different soil types. The applicant would be required to follow recommended erosion and sediment control practices during any construction and to maintain vegetation after completion of any construction. There are no storm flood hazard areas or tax ditches affected, and it will not be necessary for any off-site or on-site drainage improvements. And that's all I have, unless you have questions.
Mm-hmm. Any questions?
That's the big building on 16, not far from the new gas station.
Yeah, there, yes. If you looked at the aerial, mm-hmm. yeah. or if you could mm-hmm. see the aerial, mm-hmm. the big red barn-type building is
with a white roof.
The latest construction, and that was for the purpose of the meat cutting, sales, et cetera. The house to the right of it, going towards Ellendale, is on the same property, and that was actually the little craft store.
Oh, it was. Okay, fine.
The applicant, if you'll come forward, identify yourself and give us your address,
Moore.
Please.
My name is Lamar Yoder. I live on Shawnee Road in Greenwood, Delaware. And thank you for your consideration of this. Mr. Lank, did you receive a letter from David Wilson that you want to read into the record?
No, I haven't. I did receive his comments at the day of the public hearing. All right, I'll pass. I'll read this into the record if it's appropriate. This is a letter addressed to the Honorable Michael Vincent, President of Sussex County Council. The purpose of my letter is to lend my support to Mr. Sam Yoder's application to change the use of a specific piece of property from conditional use to B1. It is my understanding this application has been reviewed by Planning and Zoning of Sussex County Government and will receive a final vote by Sussex County Council in the near future. This change in the conditional use of this property permanently will allow Mr. Yoder and his family to place this property on market for the purpose of selling this location at a business site. Encouraging small businesses in our area is important to our economy and in stimulating opportunities in terms of jobs, et cetera, for our citizens. I urge you and the members of the council to vote favorably for this change in land use and thanking you for your attention to this matter. Sincerely, David L. Wilson, 35th District State Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Lang. Part of the difficulty we've had in the rezoning process is not knowing exactly what type of business is going to be coming in. The sole purpose of Mr. Yoder selling this is to shed some of his properties because of financial difficulties. And the property was actually auctioned in September of 2010. And one of the problems that arose after that auction was it was zoned conditional use and was limited on what the building could be used for. So the person that was the high bidder declined to go through with the sale. And so the property is still vacant. And talking with this person and several others, both have stated that if we could get the rezoning to B1, there would be serious consideration for them to purchase this property, and Sam could be done with that. As we've stated, it is on Route 16, which is a major road through Sussex County. There is a Royal Farms down the road, an Exxon station. Also across the road is where the old Southern Grill used to be. I believe those properties are either zoned commercial or B1 already. Other than that, I think everything was already stated from the record from planning and zoning.
Any questions from council?
How long would you say that that building's been used for business?
It was used approximately 3 years.
3 years, mm-hmm. Okay.
2.5 to 3 years before it was closed down. Sam actually closed that building and moved it mm-hmm. back to his farm.
Okay.
Where he had a meat store originally. Mm-hmm. And so it's been basically vacant since then.
Okay.
Any other questions? If not, is there anyone else here that would like to speak in favor of this application? Anyone that would like to speak in favor? Is there anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to this application? Anyone in opposition? Seeing none at this point, Mr. President, I think it's appropriate to close the public hearing on this matter and to close the record on this matter if the council so deems.
It's a pleasure, council.
I think it's
pleasure.
Okay.
It's a good project.
We'll, close the record. And Mr. Lank, if you would read the title.
Yes, sir. It's an ordinance to amend the comprehensive zoning map of Sussex County from an AR1 agriculture residential district to a B1 neighborhood business district for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Cedar Creek 100, Sussex County, containing 5.93 acres, more or less.
I'll introduce it.
Got the same road for the same building, everything, so I don't
We have a motion by Mrs. Deaver to approve the rezoning with the conditions, I guess?
No.
No conditions.
No conditions.
This is
Condition, that's correct.
Second.
And a second. Any questions on the motion? Now we'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver.
I vote yes. It's appropriate location for B1 zoning, and there are reasons given by planning and zoning, and I would like to include those in my vote.
Mr. Cole.
I'll have to abstain since I got up and I didn't realize it would go so fast.
Okay. Mr. Phillips?
I vote yes. It's an appropriate use for the area. There's commercial around it, and it's had some use in a similar fashion, and it doesn't seem to have caused any problems.
Mr. Wilson?
I vote yes, according to planning and zoning.
I agree with planning and zoning. It does certainly seem that it's been a business before, even though it was conditional use. And it certainly makes sense, I think, to have it zoned and B1 so you know what you can or cannot do with it. I vote yes. Motion carried.
Thank you. Mr. President, at this time, there is one additional matter that's on the agenda, and there was no specific time allocated to it, as we often do during the council hearings, but just at the end of the regular agenda. This is the time and place for us to have a public hearing on an ordinance concerning administrative variances. Mr. Lank will make a presentation to council concerning the proposed ordinance. At that time, council will have an opportunity to question him concerning the matter before council. After the council has completed their questions, I will then open the hearing up to the general public, where any members present can come forward and speak. Again, as with regular hearings, come to the podium, give us your name and address, and then be concise with your reasons in favor of or in opposition. Mr. Lang?
Yes. Excuse me. This is an ordinance to amend Chapter 115 of the Code of Sussex County by amending Article 25, Section 115-181, relating to yards and open spaces generally. The Planning and Zoning Commission held public hearing on this ordinance amendment on March 10th of 2011. The ordinance was read into the record. In summary, there were no parties present in support of the ordinance amendment. Dorothy Boucher, Roberta Hemrick, and John Walsh were present in opposition and gave testimony. At the conclusion of the public hearing, the commission discussed this ordinance amendment. On March 10th of 2011, the commission deferred action. That motion carried 5-0. On March 24th of 2011, the commission again discussed the ordinance amendment. And Mr. Burton expressed some concern about the lack of a public hearing if a neighbor objects to a proposal. Mr. Johnson stated he would support this type of ordinance. Mr. Ross stated he agreed and supports this type of ordinance. Mr. Wheatley expressed some concern about controlling repeat offenders. Mr. Smith stated he has some concern about the responsibility being put on the director rather than the Board of Adjustment. And there again was a motion and a second and carried unanimously to defer action for further consideration.
If I understand it, I'm sorry, you finished?
Almost.
Okay.
For the benefit of the council, I will pass down copies of a letter I received yesterday. This is from Rick Burrell.
Okay.
Smith Feinberg McCartney and Burrow LLP, which he is also the assistant county attorney on behalf of the Board of Adjustment. And if I can read into the record, we do have some parties of interest. It states that in reference to the administrative variance ordinance, the Planning and Zoning Commission held its public hearing with respect to the above on March 10th in deferred action. Since I was unable to attend the public hearing, I reviewed the minutes from March 10th meeting and noted a number of comments. I am taking this opportunity to address those as the attorney for the Board of Adjustment. As you know, this ordinance was born as a result of criticism of the Board of Adjustment last year by a handful of individuals who managed to stir enough controversy to get the attention of a local reporter. The end result was a joint meeting between Council and Board of Adjustment at which the Council urged Everett Moore and me to come up with some suggestions as to how to streamline the operation of the board, identify problem areas, and perhaps reduce unnecessary costs. This ordinance is part of the work that Everett and I did with you and your staff. Let me point out in advance that Sussex County is, to my knowledge, the only political subdivision in Delaware without such an ordinance. Both Newcastle and Kent County governments have had an ordinance like this for many years. Within the last few years, the General Assembly passed a law giving municipalities a similar right. You are on record as having opposed such an ordinance in the past because of concerns that unscrupulous developers would take advantage of the law and use it as a method for increasing the size of dwellings. All of us, of course, have far more confidence in your ability to recognize someone trying to take advantage of the system, and we are pleased that you are now on board with this sort of discussion. Several residents of manufactured homes who are also frequent critics of the board objected because manufactured home parks are not exempt. That is absolutely ludicrous. The board is no less likely to approve a 6-inch variance in a manufactured home park than it is anywhere else. The board regularly hears applications for variances on only a few inches, if for no reason than the surveying techniques of today are far more exact than those in years past. That requires an individual to pay the $400 application fee, the cost of a survey, and sometimes the cost of an attorney. Numerous individuals, including owners of manufactured homes, have complained about those costs, and that was something we were trying to minimize and which the ordinance addresses. To suggest that those in the manufactured home community should not benefit from the savings offered by the ordinance, both in terms of time and money, is absurd. I cannot imagine being a representative of manufactured homeowners and having to explain why I argued against saving those same individuals hundreds of dollars. Manufactured home parks were never intended to be exempt from this ordinance, and there is no reason why they should be. Another one of the criticism was that there was no opportunity for a public hearing. Rarely does the board have an audience for a 6-inch variance, and even more rarely does someone object to such a minimal request. A public hearing requires notice, advertising, and the like, and short expense, which an applicant will be expected to cover. Again, one of the purposes of the ordinance is to reduce the expense associated with such a minimal request. A public hearing would clearly undermine that goal. Finally, another comment suggested that an independent hearing officer or committee was necessary as opposed to having this done in-house. That, of course, is similarly contrary to the underlying intention of the ordinance. There is already an independent body considering variance requests, and that is the Board of Adjustment. What would possibly be gained by creating yet another level of bureaucracy? Please pass these comments along to the commission, and that was signed Rick Burrow, Jr., Assistant County Attorney.
Mr. Lank, I have a
Sir.
Question concerning the letter. It's my understanding that the ordinance that we're considering today does not include the manufactured housing parks because that is by a separate ordinance entirely. And so this is not considered here, is that correct?
Exactly right. These manufactured home regulations are part of the conditional use requirements, and they are so stipulated, and it is separate.
And so what we're discussing today only concerns subdivisions, people that are outside of those parks.
Right. It could be a commercial, it could be residential, it could be a fee simple situation, it could be a RPC condominium type regime, but not a manufactured home park.
And further, since I sat on the Manufactured Housing Committee as well. We did discuss this with the Manufactured Housing Committee, the possibility of having an ordinance such as this. The committee did not want the same type of ordinance, and so therefore we did not draft an ordinance, including the Manufactured Housing Committee.
We got a mixed comments from the committee. Dorothy Boucher on behalf of the Manufactured Homeowners opposed it. Steve Class on behalf of the Manufactured Home Community Park Owners seemed to support it, but it wasn't finalized in any form to say yes, they would, the whole committee would support it.
Yes, and what you just stated was correct. There was mixed reviews on that, but none have been drafted concerning the manufactured home parks. So what we're discussing today is strictly areas other than manufactured home parks.
That's right.
Okay. I just want to clarify that because it seemed a little confused by the letter.
And if I can, just to get this onto the public reference. Under the proposal, administrative variances is an additional section of 181E. Administrative variances, one, notwithstanding the provisions of Article 27 of this code, the Director of Planning and Zoning may administratively grant a yard setback or building separation variance that does not exceed 1 foot of the yard setback or building separation requirement. Two, there shall be a $50 fee to request an administrative variance. If the applicant has to eventually submit an application to the Board of Adjustment, the applicant shall receive a $50 credit towards the Board of Adjustment application fee. The applicant shall submit a survey signed and sealed by a surveyor licensed in the state of Delaware to the Director of Planning and Zoning in order to be considered for an administrative variance. Three, the Director of Planning and Zoning shall give written notice to adjacent property owners of the requested administrative variance and accept written statements for 10 working days from the date of mailing. The Director of Planning and Zoning shall be governed by all the procedures, standards, and limitations in this chapter applicable to the Board of Adjustment in granting variances, except the public hearing. And five, within 30 working days after the administrative variance application is submitted and accepted, the Director of Planning and Zoning may approve the administrative variance or advise the applicant requesting the administrative variance and an application must be submitted to the Board of Adjustment. And section two, the effective date this ordinance shall become effective upon its adoption by a majority of all members elected to council. In reference to question raised by Mr. Burrell's letter about, and also by Mr. Wheatley in the discussion on the 24th about repeat offenders, mm-hmm. that would be the director will advise the applicant requesting the administrative variance and application must be submitted to the board.
Mm-hmm. And wasn't that part of the reason that you requested that the language stated that the director may grant it? It was not shall grant it, it was may.
Exactly.
So that you had the right to turn down someone if it turned out that they were repeat offenders.
And there were some things that came out in the public hearing with the commission, if this were to be granted,
we're creating a monster.
That we would have to create policy on how we notified the neighbors. If there was a decision, the neighbors should be notified. Doesn't say so in the ordinance, but it could be done by policy.
So they would have an opportunity to know about it and speak against it.
Well, they would speak against it up front, and we would just advise them that it was approved or disapproved or went to the board, and they could speak again.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any questions from council of Mr. Lank before we open the public hearing?
I'm going to say something about the tone of this letter. I do not want to be part of a government that talks about constituents in the way this letter talks about constituents. We work for the people. We're here on their behalf. We're being paid by the people to represent them, and I object to the tone of this letter.
I can assure you, Ms. Deaver, I did not see that letter until Mr. Lank just read it. And if there's no other questions, we'll open the public hearing now. Would anyone like to speak in reference to this proposed ordinance?
Thank you. My name is Roberta Hemrick. I live in McNichol Place in Lewis. I'm speaking in opposition to the ordinance. While I applaud the efforts to make this process easier, I still have some concerns. Even though we have been assured that this ordinance has nothing to do with manufactured housing, we need that to be clearly stated in the wording. Intent without the verbiage can be manipulated by attorneys for some landowners, and we've seen this happen in the past. The Board of Adjustments is a quasi-judicial board. To give even a small portion of this power to one person, I believe, would be a great mistake and would potentially lead to more problems for the county. Mr. Lank is an extremely busy man, and this would be an additional burden that might prove very cumbersome. Thank you for letting me voice my opinion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll say thank you, too, Bobby, on that one.
Anyone else like to speak? Yes, sir.
Cut into some of his golf. Playing too much golf.
Good afternoon, members of council. My name is John Walsh. I live at 48 Colonial Lane in Rehoboth Beach. I have three serious problems with the ordinance as currently presented. First of all, as we have just learned from the letter from Mr. Burrell, there is obviously some confusion on the attorney's part as to exactly what they meant. Since the attorney for the Board of Adjustment is saying one thing, and of course, we have been given to understand, as Mr. Lank has and as Mr. Moore has, something different. So this speaks for itself, the possible confusion. If this does not include manufactured housing, which we have been assured by Mr. Lank is not the case, it should specify it does not apply to manufactured housing. The second problem I have with this is the lack of transparency. With this ordinance, one person in private decides what has been decided in the past by a five-member public board. All right, this, I think, can possibly lead to difficulties. There is no provision for the publication of the decisions or a statement of the appeal process. If what is decided in private is then just stated later, if people were unaware of what was going on, and I'm thinking of a very recent case about a cell phone tower where the information was given for the wrong property, automatically we were going to end up in a court case. And I really think the county, much as they like the attorneys, might not have to give them more money, you know, than is absolutely necessary. Finally, there's a lack of accountability. There's nothing in the ordinance that would involve procedures to report exactly the number of cases that are given to council, what the decisions were, whatever appeals may have been made, so that council can update and consider whatever modifications may be required. In other words, this becomes almost a court of star chamber, and council is basically removed from the process. I think this is possibly causing serious difficulties further down the road for the county. Thank you very much for your time.
Is there anyone else that would like to speak in regards to this ordinance or proposed ordinance? Anyone else that would like to speak?
Me.
We'll have an opportunity for questions.
You want to go around front?
No, I can do it from here if I'm allowed. No, I don't. Well, this could be on the record. I'm just curious. How does this differ from my understanding is Kent and Newcastle County have had similar ordinances in place? How does this? Is there any major difference from this and what they're doing?
I don't have it in front of me, but one county has the 1 foot.
Right. 1 foot?
The 1 foot has administrative variance as a max. Okay. The other has a percentage. I think it's 10%, if
that's
I remember
correct.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we're doing 6 inches or something?
And we're doing no more than a foot.
No more than a foot, okay.
Right. My recollection is Newcastle County has no more than a foot. Kent
yeah, right.
County has 10%, no more than 10% administratively. Otherwise, it would have to go, you know, before the appropriate body.
So other than that, that's about the differences and stuff.
Well,
so
we did, there was no need to reinvent the wheel, so as much as possible, we looked to their ordinances for some guidance because they've been in place for a long time.
Is anybody aware of any problems that other counties have experienced from their administrative variances. Is anybody?
I haven't heard of anything major. I would have a concern if it was 10%.
Mm-hmm. You don't like the percentage.
The percentage is
awkward.
Would be a little difficult.
Okay.
A little awkward, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was looking in my extra file here and see if I had anything from.
You could go 10% for the first 10 feet, and after that,
Well, I like keeping things as simple as possible. When it's 1 foot, it's easy for anybody to figure that one out,
yeah,
even
right.
You.
And as was indicated earlier, recently the municipalities have been given this right to do the administrative variances by state statute.
It seems like it's a way to save people, especially the public, having to make some expenditures that they, you know, that aren't necessary. It's like overkill. So we're reducing some of that burden.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
If I understand it, then if the zoning administrator, he makes a decision, he or she makes a decision, is it posted in the paper? Would that be published, the decision published, or does it automatically happen?
Hasn't been. Not a public hearing process.
So how would the people know about it?
Well, we'd have to generate a letter to the same party that were given notice at the beginning.
The way we do with rezonings, or what?
No, what we do on rezonings is advertised, but it's a public hearing notice.
Right.
What we do on rezonings and conditional uses and board of adjustment cases right now is that we notify anybody within 200 foot.
Right.
This ordinance says immediate neighbors.
Immediate neighbors.
So if you're dealing with four sides or three sides, typically in a road, you're dealing with three people.
Okay.
Is there any application or fee associated with what we're talking about?
For the $50 fee, if I'm the director and I refuse it and deny their application, they have the right to go to the Board of Adjustment, then their $50 is applied to the $400 fee, so it would pay $350 additional to get the balance.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else.
Yeah, part of the goal was to help people on these minor things so that if Mr. Lank or whoever the director is determined that it was not appropriate, then, you know, we're not trying to ding them for more fees, just apply it.
Well, a lot of times in the past we've tried to associate a fee with the cost of actually
right.
providing the service.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with the $50 cover the cost of providing a service, as long as we don't have to advertise, like Joan, if we start advertising,
mm-hmm.
then all of a sudden, you know, somebody subsidizing that would be the tax base. So, and again, the $50, and we're not advertising, and we're not doing a lot of
notification. We had to advertise, we'd go rate it back up to $300 or $400.
$400,
you got to
right.
cover the advertisement cost.
Right. Now, how about the mailings?
Mailings, in this case, the way the ordinance is set up, it's basically going to be three people. Well, it could be three or four or five,
okay,
but
okay.
typically it's a small parcel.
Okay, we're not doing within 200 feet, everybody.
It just says adjacent.
Okay, that's good. Okay, I'm just trying to say we're gonna charge a minimal fee. We ought to have minimal
work
expenses.
We've talked about this. We talked about it at the committee meetings that we see a survey, say 5 or 10 years ago. Okay, or we see a survey today and we go back and find in research that we find a survey that shows basically the same thing, but the setbacks are different and they're minimal typically
mm-hmm.
because the surveyor's equipment today is more advanced than what it was 10, 20, 30 years ago. And I've said this before, when I first started working for the county, they were using chains and tapes to do measuring. They were using a transit to establish their bearings, and then now it's all laser done. The accuracy is unreal. If I send staff out with a tape and they measure 10 foot, I've told them they shouldn't grant it if it's required to be 10, because that 10's on tape and it's an arc. It's not perfect 10, so it should be more on, you know, to get it. But it's just information. The technology today by surveys. Unbelievable compared to years past.
And you're talking about a small variance, obviously, up to a foot is not a lot of. And we certainly have heard complaints from people before a lot of times about costing them $400+.
Well, it's going to cost, if they're going to still be required to survey, do this, that survey is still going to be a fee
sure.
involved between that surveyor and the
right.
individual. But if they go to the board, there should be a survey too, unless they're proposing something, not something they've already built.
Oftentimes,
it's already built's been a problem. That's where you have to know exactly what they're applying for.
Right. Oftentimes, they've already paid to get a survey. that's when they find out maybe they're selling the property. Wait a minute, there's a violation here. Mm-hmm. My building's, you know, 6 inches too mm-hmm. close or encroaching in a setback that they didn't know before and the previous owner didn't know before.
And you're sitting at a settlement table or something and you're finding this information out and it's wonderful. Putting a kink in a bunch of people's...
Well, what Everett just said is exact because Shane and I, we review surveys that are scheduled for settlement sometime the same or the next day. And we look at that survey and see an error in the setback requirement because the survey showed it to us, whether it had a CO or not. Then we have to decide whether there was a CO granted and whether they get a free ride to the Board of Adjustment, because we're not going to charge them if there was an error made by us.
Right.
So they go to the board at no charge. We have to absorb
it. Mr. Matt,
would happen up front. We would see it up front.
Will you entertain a motion to defer?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Do we need to close anything first?
Yes, we need to close the public hearing at this time, and then it's ready for a motion to defer.
I'd like to move that we defer.
Second.
Any question on the motion to defer? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Move that we adjourn.
Motion to adjourn and a second, Mr. Second. Wilson. All in favor, say aye.
He'll second that one.
Thank you very much.
I'm tired of hearing you, George. I want to go home.
I'm ready to go home, too. I've eaten all Helen's food.